In the southern kingdom of Salahara, Sultan Rishon Ulsalar had ruled for many years. At his side stood his eldest daughter, Samira, as Sultana, and the vizier Tariq al-Sadiq. The Sultan was beloved by his people, for he ruled with wisdom and justice, yet the weight of his crown grew heavier with every passing day. He had brought prosperity, order, and peace to Salahara, and the people thrived under his reign. It had not always been so, but that is another story. Deep in his heart, Rishon was still the impetuous Knight of Wands who had once served his father, Sadiq Ulsalar, before succeeding his father on the throne. He longed for adventure, for the call of distant lands and the taste of freedom. The price of duty had risen year by year, and it had grown unbearable since the death of his beloved wife, Layla. He had raised Samira to rule at his side, yet she was more interested in festivals, jewels, and her falcons than in matters of state. Rishon missed his wife's calm counsel, her laughter, and most of all the ease of their companionship and his freedom. Now there were only obligations, endless audiences, councils, and reports from the vizier. Especially the regular meetings with Leonora, the guild mistress from the capital, left him weary and bored. Often, he sat upon his lion throne, gazing out across the golden domes of Sapphira, the capital of Salahara. At dusk, when the setting sun bathed the roofs and towers in molten light, it was a sight fit for a dream. Yet beauty could not ease the ache in his soul. He had done all that was expected of him, ruled wisely, upheld tradition. But the voice within him grew louder, a whisper that spoke of freedom, of fire, of the man he once had been. One evening, as he stood on the balcony of his chamber and the first star rose in the deepening sky, Rishon knew he could no longer ignore the call. In the adjoining room, his old armor still gleamed upon its stand, polished each year though it had not been worn for many years. He stepped inside, laid his hand upon the cool metal, and felt a thrill run through him. He took up his sword. The weight of it was familiar, comforting. For a moment, he was young again, a knight beneath the open desert sky. He smiled at the memory of the escapades that had once driven his father to despair. His eldest son, Nazir, was much the same, bold, restless, and far too charming for his own good. Rishon had always been lenient with him. His youngest, Amir, was now far away in the capital of Tarkania, beginning his training at the Tarot Guild. Rishon drew a deep breath and sat at his desk. He dipped his quill into the dark ink and began to write. "My dear friend Tariq, by the time you read these lines, I shall already be far away. Since Layla passed, my heart has grown heavier. She helped me bear the burden of my office and be the man Salahara deserves. I have fulfilled my duty for many years, but now I must follow the call of my soul. I entrust my beloved land to you and to my daughter, Samira. You know her well, guide her wisely. Help her to be her mother's true daughter. Nazir burns with ambition and courage. Give him tasks worthy of his fire, for one day he shall be sultan. Let him learn to rule, but remind him also to listen. Keep an eye on Amir, but reveal little of what passes in Salahara. Leonora need not know all that stirs beneath the sands. I will return, though I cannot say when. My soul must first find what it seeks. I know Salahara is safe in your hands. May the good spirits of Tarkania and the wisdom of the tarot guide and protect you. Your old friend, Rishon Ulsalar." He read the letter once more and felt a lightness in his chest, as if a door had opened. He set the parchment upon the desk and placed his scepter upon it to hold it fast. Then he returned to the armor, donned it piece by piece, buckled his sword at his side, and left the chamber. Through the quiet corridors he moved unseen. Peace reigned in Salahara, and the guards kept only light watch. Soon he reached the stables. The air was warm and heavy with the scent of hay and horses. The stable boys slept, and the only sounds were the soft snorts of the animals. Rishon smiled at their negligence. It served him well this night. He saddled his black stallion, led it out and mounted. Without a backward glance, he rode through the sleeping city towards the gates. The guards bowed as he passed, surprised but unquestioning. He was their sultan, and surely he had his reasons. Once beyond the walls of Sapphira, Rishon spurred his steed into a gallop. The wind rushed past, and with each pounding stride, the weight of duty fell further behind. The desert stretched before him, vast, silent, and free. Rishon remembered once again how to navigate by the stars. He followed the morning star eastwards, while the night slowly yielded to the pale light of dawn. The chill in the air faded as the first golden rays touched the horizon, and soon the desert shimmered in the rising sun. As he rode on, the sand gave way to dry grass and scattered thornbushes. The land was turning to steppe. Far ahead, a faint silhouette marked a village. Rishon's stomach reminded him that it had been long since his last meal, and his steed, too, deserved rest. He turned his horse towards the distant shapes. The village was small, built of sun-baked clay, ringed with date palms and crossed by narrow canals that carried water to the fields. A modest sign creaked in the wind before a low tavern, beside which stood a stable. Rishon dismounted, handed a coin to a sleepy stable boy, and entered. Inside, it was cool and dim. The scent of bread and dates hung in the air. The innkeeper, without a word, set before him a simple meal of bread, sheep's cheese, dates, and a cup of light beer, the breakfast of common folk. Rishon nodded in thanks, grateful for the quiet. No one recognized him, and he was glad of it. The bread was warm, the cheese salty and sharp, the dates sweet as honey. He felt more alive than he had in years. When he looked around, he noticed a man sitting alone, his shoulders slumped, eyes heavy with worry. Rishon hesitated only a moment before rising and crossing the room. "May I join you?" he asked. The man looked up, startled, then nodded. "Rishon Saturday, you look troubled, friend." The man sighed. "At every full moon, a beast comes and kills one of my sheep. Soon I shall have none left. My dog hides in terror, and my traps fail. My family will starve if this continues. Have you sought help from your sultan or his vizier?" Rishon asked gently. The man gave a bitter laugh. "Men like me don't trouble those in power. They have their courts and feasts and know nothing of us. Who would listen to a poor shepherd?" "I would," Rishon said. The shepherd looked at him in disbelief.
You
wear armor. You must serve the sultan."
"I cannot pay you."
Rishon smiled. "Then let that be my choice. I ask no payment, only shelter for me and my horse until the next full moon." The man nodded, still looking doubtful. "The next full moon is in 3 days. You won't be my guest for long, then. But I doubt even a knight can stand against that creature." Rishon grinned. "We shall see. Come, let's have another beer, and you can tell me everything you know about this beast." The innkeeper brought 2 fresh mugs, and the man began to speak of what had happened. "As you now know, it always happens at full moon," the man began. "Of course I have a dog to guard my flock, but after the night the first sheep was torn apart, he crept into the house whimpering, tail between his legs. Since then, I have not been able to persuade him, neither with blows nor with kind words or meat, to stay with the flock when the full moon rises. I raised him from a pup, and he has never turned against me. Yet when the moon grows full and his duty calls, he growls and bares his teeth, so that I am almost as afraid of him as of that dreadful creature itself. When the moon wanes, he is himself again and returns to his post. I can't really blame him, but he still lets me down. And if it goes on like this, my family and I will soon be ruined, for the sheep are all we have." He sighed deeply. "Of course I've tried to defend them myself. I made a club with nails hammered into the end, hoping to crush the beast's skull. I dug pits and covered them with branches, but instead one of my own sheep fell in and broke its neck. I no longer know what to do. If you cannot help me, then no one can. Each full moon, my family and I hear a soft song, sweet and beguiling. Whatever we do, it lulls us to sleep, and come morning, one of my sheep is gone. I find only blood and a few tufts of fur, nothing more. The others huddle together, trembling with fear. I do not know how you mean to resist such a spell, stranger. Tell me at least your name, if you are to be a guest beneath my roof." "I am Jasir, Knight of Wands," Rishon said, careful not to reveal his true name. "And what is yours, my friend?"
"I am Salim," the man replied.
"Welcome to my home, humble though it is."
"Then let us go," said Rishon, rising from his seat. Together they left the tavern.
When the sun stood high above the village, Rishon followed Salim along a dusty path towards the outskirts. The old donkey trudged ahead with a small bundle of firewood tied to its back, while Rishon led his black horse by the reins,
the heat shimmering across the horizon. Salim's home was a modest mud hut with a thatched roof and a few clay jars placed neatly by the door. A faint breeze carried the scent of dry grass and sheep. Inside, it was dim but tidy, barely large enough for Salim, his wife, and their two children, a boy and a girl with wide, curious eyes who peered shyly at the stranger in their doorway. "I told you, stranger," Salim said with a weary smile, "I am a poor man. I have no chamber fit for a night. But if you can sleep on straw beside the sheep, the shed outside is yours." "That will do perfectly," Rishon replied. "This way your flock will grow used to me before the full moon." The shepherd nodded. "You understand animals. That is good." Rishon unsaddled his horse and let it graze near the shed. The sheep stirred restlessly but soon settled. He spread his blanket on the straw, arranged it to form a modest bed, and leaned back, listening to the rustle of the wind and the bleating of lambs. A smile touched his lips. "So this is what I longed for, no throne, no council, just the quiet breath of the earth." When night fell, the stars burned bright above the steppe. Rishon lay awake for a while, gazing up at them, then drifted into dreamless sleep. By dawn, Salim was already outside, driving his few remaining sheep towards the open plains. Rishon rose and stretched. The shepherd's wife appeared in the doorway, silent and slender as a shadow. She pressed a warm piece of flatbread, a small bowl of cheese, and a cup of milk into his hands before vanishing again into the dimness. Rishon murmured thanks, ate outside in the morning light, and noticed the two children watching him from a distance. He smiled and beckoned to them. "I am Jasir, Knight of Wands," he said softly. "And who are you, my young friends?" The boy hesitated, then stepped forward. "I am Rafik," he said, glancing at the sword at Rishon's side. "And this is Noor, my sister." "Well met, Rafik and Noor," Rishon replied kindly. "Your sheep have brave guardians, I see." The children giggled, and Rishon's smile widened. When he finished his meal, he stood and began to explore the land near the sheepfold. The soil was dry and cracked. Rishon found nothing but a few broken branches, so he decided to saddle his horse and search the surrounding lands. He stepped into the hut and asked Salim's wife for some water. Without a word, she handed him a leather pouch. "She's not exactly friendly," he thought as he left, "but perhaps that's simply how common folk are in my realm." He recalled the many court hearings he had attended over the years and realized, perhaps for the first time, that he had seen almost no women there. They were rare exceptions in a world ruled by men. A quiet unease stirred in him, and he resolved to speak with his vizier upon his return to the palace, for it struck him how little he truly knew of his own people's lives. Slowly, Rishon rode towards the open steppe. The village lay behind him, and beyond it rose the mountains of heat, Jabal al-Hera. If he found no trace of the creature there, he would have to climb into those mountains, a thought that did not appeal to him in the least. He rode until the sun stood high and the heat forced him to rest. By then he had found no trace of the beast, yet his mind was far from idle. A quiet suspicion had begun to take root. There were many magical beings in Tarkania, but out here in the steppe, the account of the strange song could point to only one, the Lunar Lionesses. He had once dismissed those stories as children's legends, but now he began to wonder if there was more truth in them than he had ever believed. When the glare of the sun began to sting his eyes, Rishon halted beside a withered acacia tree. "Better than nothing," he thought. He dismounted, drank deeply, and let the stillness settle around him. The warmth, the still air, the steady beat of his own heart all lulled him into drowsiness. Before long, he drifted into sleep. When he woke again, the light was golden, and long shadows stretched across the steppe. He rubbed his eyes and smiled faintly. "I won't help Salim by sleeping through the day," he muttered. "Still, I haven't rested like this in years." He whistled for his horse, who trotted obediently over, and turned back toward the shepherd's hut. The nearly full moon was rising when Rishon returned. Salim sat outside with his children, his face drawn and anxious. "Nothing, I'm afraid," Rishon replied with a weary sigh. "No trace at all, only a few broken branches." "I told you," Salim muttered. "And I have little hope left that even you can help me. The full moon rises the day after tomorrow, and I'll lose another sheep. It will go on like this until I have none left." What is to become of me and my family? The full moon has not yet come, Rishon said gently. You still have your flock, and I give you my word you and your family will not lose your home. He tried to sound reassuring, though Salim's face showed no relief. To distract him from his worry, Rishon asked, Have you ever heard the tale of the lunar lionesses? That's just an old story, Salim grumbled. But Noor's eyes lit up. Oh yes, Baba, please tell it. It's my favorite story, begged the little girl. Salim sighed but smiled, unable to resist her. Very well, little one. But it is you who must promise to sleep when the tale is done. He turned to Rishon and began. A long, long time ago, when the lands of Tarkania were still divided into many small realms, there lived a princess near Sapphira. Her name was Yasmin Ulkamar, Yasmin of the Moon. Her hair was black as night, her skin pale as ivory, and her heart kind and gentle. She was the most beautiful and gentle soul ever to live in Salahara, and you, my little Noor, are very much like her. He lovingly stroked his daughter's hair, and she beamed. Yasmin loved all creatures and could speak their tongue, or so the stories say. Birds told her of faraway places, gazelles of the changing winds, and even the desert fox would lie by her feet. But most of all, Yasmin loved cats, their grace, their pride, their fierce freedom. One day, she rode alone into the steppe on her white horse. The wind was warm, and the sky a flawless blue. The sand shivered then, with a sharp hiss, a great cobra rose before her, its hood spreading like a dark fan. Her horse reared in terror, hooves flashing, and Yasmin was thrown to the ground. When she came to, the world was silent, her horse nowhere to be seen, and before her stood a lion with a manner dark as storm clouds. Noor gasped softly, eyes wide. He came closer, slow and cautious, his golden eyes narrowing. Despite her fear, Yasmin found her voice. Who are you? She asked softly. The lion halted. Never before had he understood the words of a human. I am Hakim, he rumbled. And why is it that I can understand you? I am Yasmin Ulkamar, she replied, and I speak the language of all creatures, yours as well, noble Hakim. I fell from my horse when it was frightened by a cobra, and now I don't know where I am or how to find my way home. Can you help me? Hakim looked deep into her eyes, as though he could see straight into her soul. After a moment he spoke. I keep away from humans, they hunt us, and many from my pride have already been slain. Yet your heart seems pure. Come with me to my family, and then we shall see. Yasmin rose and followed the lion through the steppe. But the path was long and dusty, and the sun burned fiercely above. She felt her strength fading. Hakim saw her falter, then knelt and offered to carry her on his back. Exhausted yet grateful, Yasmin accepted. As she laid her head against his mane, she drifted into a deep, dreamless sleep. She awoke as the lion lay down and she slipped from his back. Curious lionesses watched her with wary eyes, yet none questioned Hakim's choice. The pride rested in the shade of a mighty tree, and nearby Yasmin saw several date palms standing beside a small pool. Only then did she realize how hungry and thirsty she was. She dragged herself to the water's edge and cupped her hands, drinking until her thirst was quenched. A few dates had fallen to the ground. She rinsed them in the cool water before eating them slowly, savoring their sweetness. Then Yasmin turned to Hakim. What happens now? Will you help me return home? Hakim shook his dark mane. No. Your people have brought great suffering to mine. You must prove yourself worthy and earn your return. Yasmin sank to her knees in despair. She thought of her family, of her beloved brother, who would surely miss her. What must I do? She asked, tears glistening in her eyes. You will live among us, hunt with us, and learn who we are, said Hakim. When the time is right, I will decide whether you may return. So Yasmin bowed to her fate. Through the stories of the lions, she learned how humans hunted them and stole their cubs to sell as exotic prizes. She learned to use sharp stones as knives, to shape simple spears, and to survive in the wild. Yet the lions, too, learned from her about humans. When a storm once set fire to a dry bush, Yasmin seized the glowing embers and kindled a fire of her own to warm herself and roast the meat the lions left for her. Over time, Yasmin herself became almost like a lioness. Gradually, the lionesses accepted her, for she cared for the cubs while the pride was out hunting. One day, as she was playing with the little ones, she heard a desperate cry. A hyena had seized one of the cubs and was dragging it away. Without a moment's hesitation, Yasmin snatched a burning branch from the fire and charged at the beast. The flames did their work, the hyena yelped, dropped the cub, and fled into the dust. At that moment, the pride returned from the hunt and gave chase, their roars echoing across the steppe. When the lionesses returned, the mother of the cub pressed close to Yasmin and gave a deep, rumbling purr. "Thank you for defending my child as if it were your own. I will never forget it. You are truly a lioness." She turned to Hakim, who gave a barely perceptible nod. "I wish to share our secret with you," the lioness continued. "There is an old legend among our pride. It tells that one day, a woman of humankind will come to us and prove herself to be a true lioness. You are that woman. And so I give you this stone, which fell from the stars on a night of the full moon. It has been passed from lioness to lioness, and now it shall be yours. It holds great magic. With it, you may take the form of a lioness and walk between worlds. You will speak with the stars and be bound to all that lives in this world and in all others. But you will no longer belong to humankind. That is the price. Are you willing to pay it?" By now, Yasmin had lived so long among the lions that she could no longer imagine returning to the world of men. She loved her pride and felt a bond with the great cats that words could never name. Yasmin nodded and took the stone. "There is no turning back," the lioness warned. "Humans will hunt and fear you. They will not see who you truly are. Are you certain you wish to live as a lioness for the rest of your days?" Yasmin nodded once more and closed her fingers around the stone. From its heart, a golden light began to glow, soft at first, then brighter and brighter, until it wrapped her in a radiant halo. She felt her body, her soul, her very spirit change. When the light faded, Yasmin was gone. In her place stood a lioness with fur of moonlit silver, who raised her head and roared into the night. And so Yasmin Al-Kamar became the ancestress of the lunar lionesses, magical beings who speak with the stars. Salim fell silent. Noor's eyes were already heavy, and so he lifted his little daughter into his arms and carried her inside. Salim returned and sat down beside Rashaun. "Why did you want to hear the story? It's just a tale told to children." "Well," Rashaun replied, "I believe there is more to it than mere fancy. But let us sleep now." With that, he rose and went back to the small shelter where he had slept the night before. The next morning passed much like the one before. Salim's shy wife silently handed Rashaun his breakfast, which he ate outside the hut. As he gazed across the wide, empty land, he thought again of Salim's account of the enchanted song. Then, quite suddenly, a story from another world came to mind. From time to time, travelers from the outer world had visited Tarkania, bringing with them their own myths and legends. Rashaun dimly recalled one such tale of a sailor and the magical beings who sang so beautifully that they lured ships to their doom. The sailor, whose name he had long forgotten, had sealed the ears of his crew with wax so they would not hear the song, while he himself was bound to the mast to resist the call. Rashaun smiled to himself. Yes, that was a way to face enchantment without falling under its spell, and perhaps to meet the creature he now suspected to be a lunar lioness. That day too, he rode out into the steppe with his black steed, but now he knew what to look for. The story had given him a clue, and he searched the ground with sharp eyes for a trace of moonsilver fur. He rode on and on, drawing ever wider circles around Salim's hut, until the heat of the day once again forced him to rest. This time he found shade beneath a rocky overhang and gazed out across the shimmering steppe. For a moment, he thought he saw a lioness in the distance, but dismissed it as a trick of the light before drifting into an uneasy sleep. In his dream, a moonsilver lioness stared at him. Yet instead of a beast's eyes, she had the eyes of a woman, clear, blue, deep and knowing. Rashaun felt a strange connection to her, as though he had known her all his life. When he woke, the image still lingered in his mind, though perhaps it was only the tale from the night before that haunted him. Lionesses with human eyes. By now, the air had cooled. Rashaun climbed the rock to survey the land. In the distance, he could make out a small oasis, the village where Salim and his family lived, and beyond it, the rugged peaks of Jabal al-Hera, sharply etched against the sky. As he descended to his horse, something caught his eye, a tuft of moon-silver fur caught on a thorn bush. So they were real, then, the lunar lionesses. With that thought, Rishon returned to Salim and told him of his dream. As proof of his suspicion, he drew the tuft of fur from his pouch and held it out, but Salim only laughed. "My friend, your imagination runs away with you," he said. "That story of Yasmin is still in your head. The fur could be from a gazelle or some other creature. Lunar lionesses belong to the world of fairy tales. But tell me this, what do you intend to do tomorrow night when the moon is full? I have taken you in, and you promised to kill the creature. Yet I see no progress, you are lost in stories. I promise to help you, and I will," Rishon answered. "Tomorrow you will learn everything you need to know. For now, let us enjoy the evening." He spoke the words lightly, though a tug at his heart told him otherwise as Salim spoke of slaying the creature. Rishon woke before dawn and savored the cool air. Salim was already up, opening the gate to drive the sheep out into the steppe to graze on the sparse forage. Rishon stepped forward. "I have a request, my friend," he said. "To trap the creature, I need your last lamb." Salim stared at him in horror. "I will likely lose another sheep tonight, and you ask for my only lamb? No. I cannot do that. It would hasten my ruin. Think of something else, but you shall not have the lamb." Rishon had expected as much. He drew his sword. Salim's eyes widened. "Do you mean to kill me?" he cried. "No, my friend. I give you my blood oath, and as you know, we Knights of Wands would sooner die than betray our honor and break such an oath." With a swift motion, Rishon cut his palm and closed his fist. Blood fell to the ground. "By my honor, I swear to you, Salim, that I will repay your loss tenfold and protect your family from the beast," he said. Salim nodded. "Very well. So be it. You shall have the lamb, but no more." He went to the pen and returned with the little animal. "Here, take my last lamb and go. I wish you luck, for tonight the moon will be full and the creature will surely come again to take one of my animals. I want to believe you will defeat it, but I have little hope, even if you are a Knight of Wands." Saying this, he handed Rishon a leather water pouch and walked back inside to his wife without another word. Rishon tied a rope around the lamb, saddled his horse, and set out towards the rocky outcrops where he had dreamt of the lunar lioness the day before. When he arrived, he tethered both his black stallion and the lamb to a gnarled tree. By day, there was little to fear, and Rishon still needed to find some clay to mix with the tufts of wool he had shorn from the lamb. With it, he meant to seal his ears and guard himself against the creature's enchanted song. In a hollow, he found what he was looking for and tested his idea. To his satisfaction, he discovered that he could indeed hear nothing. Then he lay down beneath the rocky ledge and waited for night to fall. Once more, sleep claimed him. And once more, he dreamed of the lioness with human eyes. Yet this time the vision blurred, and he could no longer tell whether it was a lioness or a woman. A beautiful woman, with dark hair and skin pale as moonlight. When dusk came, Rishon loosened the stallion's reins so the animal could run free and seek safety if danger came. The lamb, however, remained bound to the tree. Its instincts sensed what approached, and it began to bleat in terror. Rishon sealed his ears with the mixture of clay and wool until the world fell silent. Then he crouched behind a rock, sword in hand, and waited for the full moon to rise. Time crept by. Then at last, the moon rose above the horizon, bathing the steppe in silver light. Rishon saw her, a lioness, her coat shining like liquid moonlight, creeping towards the lamb. Moments before she leapt, Rishon sprang from behind the rock, sword drawn, and faced the great cat. The lioness froze, crouched low, then slowly straightened. Her gaze met his, and he saw that her eyes were blue, human blue. For a few heartbeats they stared at one another, until Rishon heard a voice inside his head. "Greetings, Rishon Ulsalar, Sultan of Salahara. I am Lunara, the last lunar lioness on this side of Jabal al-Hera. Lower your sword. I mean you no harm, but you must trust me. And you may free your ears. If I wished, my song could charm you, no matter how much clay you packed inside them." Rishon obeyed. "How do you know who I am?" he asked, astonished. "I know my kind," Lunara replied. You know the tale of the Lunar Lioness, but the legend does not tell all. Your ancestors did not wish your people to learn that they, and you, are kin to Yasmin Al-Kamar. Her brother was the forefather of your line, and I am born of her line, a direct descendant of Yasmin, the first Lunar Lioness. That is why your forefathers, like you, sat upon the Lion Throne. If you are truly a daughter of the House of Ulsalar, Rashawn asked, why do you prey upon the sheep of my farmers? The people of the village have taken all the water for themselves, Lunara replied. For their fields, for their gardens. The small rivers and ponds where gazelles and other beasts once gathered have dried to dust. Our prey vanished, and we began to starve. So my pride chose to cross the mountains and follow the herds. But I was heavy with cubs and gave birth just as we were to leave. My pride wished to stay, yet I sent them away. They should not suffer because of me. I remained, to raise my young until they were strong enough to endure the crossing. So I began to hunt the sheep, to live, to feed my children. Now they are grown and ready for the journey. We Lunar Lionesses do not need much, and prey taken beneath the full moon carry a special energy that gives us strength and endurance. Your friend need not fear me any longer. This lamb will be the last I take. Then I shall go, with my children. Rashawn looked at her, deeply moved. He saw that she only wished to live, to survive, to care for her young, just as Selene did. Yet the humans had made it impossible for her. For generations they had believed the Lunar Lionesses to be no more than legend, because the creatures lived in hiding. But now, coexistence was no longer possible, at least not in this corner of Salahara. And so, they would remain a myth. Lunara nudged him gently with her head. Would you like to meet my children? Of course, Rashawn said with a grin. They are family, in a way. Lunara gave a low, throaty rumble, and four small lion cubs peeked out from behind a rock. Shyly, they crept closer and allowed Rashawn to stroke them. Not so different from the palace cats, he thought, smiling. Lunara watched him. Go now. Leave the lamb, and do not look back. Ride home, and guard our secret well. You may tell your family that the blood of the Lunar Lionesses runs in their veins, but even your vizier must never learn the truth. Humans fear what they do not understand, and that fear would bring an end to the House of Ulsalar. Rashawn nodded. Will I ever see you or your kind again? That, Lunara said softly, time will tell. Now go. Rashawn whistled for his black steed, mounted, and rode off into the moonlit night, without once looking back. As dawn broke, Rashawn reached Salim's hut. I see you've returned alive, said the shepherd with a weary smile, though without my lamb. At least no more sheep were taken. I gave you my word, and the beast that preyed upon your flock shall trouble you no more. You killed it? Salim asked in disbelief. Yes, Rashawn replied quietly. I burned the carcass in the desert. The sight was too dreadful to describe. It's better you don't know what haunted your lands. Salim studied him with narrowed eyes. He didn't quite believe Rashawn, yet if his flock was safe, he chose not to press further. I will leave now, Rashawn said, but I will not forget my oath. You shall be repaid for your loss. Once I return to Sapphira, I'll see that everything is arranged. Thank you for your hospitality and for all I have learned these past days. May the good spirits of Tarkania and the wisdom of the Tarot guide and protect you, said Salim in farewell. Rashawn returned the words, the ancient blessing of Tarkania. As he rode through the steppe, his thoughts wandered. In the quiet rhythm of his horse's stride, he realized how far he had grown from his people, how little he truly knew of their lives. His mind drifted to Lunara and her cubs. Would he ever see a Lunar Lioness again? By midday, when the sun stood high above the sands, Rashawn reached one of the messenger stations that linked the lands of Tarkania like a web. The four kings and the guild mistress kept the lines of communication strong, so that even news from the most distant corners reached the royal capitals or Tarkania city within days. Rashawn dismounted and penned a message to his vizier, ordering him to send Salim 20 sheep and 100 gold solidi, so the shepherd's family would never again know hunger or fear. Satisfied, he mounted his black steed once more and rode on, towards whatever new adventure awaited him beneath the wide, shimmering sky.